Hello and welcome to the F24 podcast. My name is David, and every week I ask creatives of all sorts to come over to my studio in North Acton to talk about their lives and interactions with London culture and creativity. I'm really intrigued in people's lives, and I love the stories we get when we use these three points as an angle for conversation. I love how the three parts cross over and intertwine and become a massive part of who we become as London creatives. It won't always be Londoners, but this is my hometown, so no better place to start. This is F24. This week's chat is with Dun London's Will and Tom. You've probably seen their clothing gracing people's bodies with nods to the London Underground, and you may have also seen their stickers and pieces about the place. Well, this is their story about their interactions with London culture and creativity. You can check their work out on Instagram at Dun London or their website, dunlondon.co.uk. We recorded this interview in May 2017.
Rollerblading with Xander and that, like, it's like we travel around a lot, so it's like it got us out south, like, and that, you know, visually you just see London, I guess, and it's like going up to West London to go to PlayStation and stuff. It's like, yeah, like there was so much going on.
Chapter 1, London. Will and Tom walk us through their early years of city life, whether it was in the UK or another country. We talk about comparisons between city and country life and walking into cultures like music, BMXing and skating.
Easy Tom, easy Will, how you doing? Thanks for coming.
Yeah, all good. Yeah, thanks for having us.
Wicked, man, wicked. So let's start at the beginning, man. Like, I know it's the two of you, so one at a time. Maybe Tom first, where are you from?
I was born in South Africa.
Oh, wow.
Moved straight into some.
Different.
Wicked. I mean, British parents, so I'm not really...
Cool.
Yeah, I'm not.
Born out there. Yeah. And how long were you there for?
Till I was 10.
Oh, wow, so you had a real life like that.
Yeah, I remember loads of stuff about it at school.
Wicked.
People, friends, family, friends, and all that.
Okay.
Going on holidays and stuff like that. But yeah, I moved to England when I was about 10.
Yeah.
Moved to Middle England,
Northamptonshire,
in the countryside, and then moved down to Kent, where I basically lived till I was about 23.
Okay.
Before I moved up to London.
All right, wicked, man.
I've been here, like, this is my 9th year in the city, so yeah, I've been here a while.
Nice, you're holding on.
Yeah.
Wicked, man. And then you?
I was born in London, brought up in Vauxhall, then moved with my parents to Herne Hill when I was about 10.
Mm-hmm.
Basically stayed mostly around South London, in like for where I've lived, but I did go to university in Leeds, so
right.
I went and lived up north for 3 years. And now, yeah, like now it's just like South East London, really. Live in New Cross, studios in Lewisham, so kind of just sort of, yeah, I don't know, when... We were in Hackney Wick in our old studio.
Yeah.
Tom had a studio there, and Tom took the decision to move to Lewisham. That's when we joined up, and it's kind of like I feel like that's really being in that area has helped us kind of grow a lot, basically.
Because distance ourselves,
get
from
out of the mix,
all the madness.
Man. Get out of that mix. Where were you? The Peanut Factory.
No, I was next to a foreman, so it's Victoria Wharf.
Yeah, I was at the Peanut Factory for a bit.
Yeah, it's fun around there, but it's just. So many distractions. It's way too easy for a party. I mean, the unit we were in before, like me and my friend Greg from college, we like built our unit inside of a huge space, which was like had loads of other units. And like before ours was actually finished, the guy who was running it, he used to have parties. So like every Friday, we'd have to like basically take all our shit on the mezzanine, put tarpaulin all over it. They'd pull rigs in, they'd have raves, and then, like, you know, we had beer like spilt through onto all our printing benches and shit. It was fucked. But it was fun because, you know, it was good fun. But, like, yeah, too many distractions. So I thought, like, a mate introduced me to the space down in Lewisham, and I thought, yeah, it's time to focus. I want a place that's secure. We can, like, I got a long lease on the unit, and I just did it up and. Here we are.
All right, wicked, man. We'll get on to what you're up to now in a bit, and let's just jump back to those early days, basically, because I like to know, what I like to find out, what I like to talk about is, fact is, you're in a culture now, and it's become your life, and I know you for that. And so there was obviously some point where it started with something. There was a culture you walked into, and you're like, right, I like culture, I like this stuff, this here for us. So what was it for you?
For me, it was BMX.
BMX, and what age were you?
I was like, when I was quite young when I first got a magazine.
Uh-huh.
Like I got BMX Plus.
Wicked.
And this was when I was probably about 10 or 11, so just after I moved to the UK.
Cool, so you didn't see any of that stuff really out in South Africa?
Not really, nah.
Yeah. No, so growing up there, it was literally just every young boy's stuff, just normal shit, football,
yeah,
running about.
Yeah, there's a lot of athletics and swimming, because it's a warm climate, so there's lots of schools, loads of, and like rugby and all that sort of shit. But yeah, coming to England, it's like smaller communities and it's all a bit more condensed, and you know, you have that, the link to the States, you can get stuff way easier, you know the imports come in, so these magazines are coming from the States, and that's when I first was like, shit.
Do you remember where you were getting them from?
Yeah, man, it was a little, like a news agent's in the high street of the village I lived in. And I used to get them to like specially keep it for me.
So it was magazines. You see these magazines and you were like, hang on one minute, what the fuck is this? I want to get involved.
And yeah, loved it, but my mum wouldn't buy me a BMX. She's just like, because I've just been tall. So she's like, it's too small, you can't buy it. I'm like, wasting my money on you.
You're
going to
need a mountain bike. You're going
to
close it more.
Yeah, I used to ride around in this pink secondhand mountain bike they bought me, and I was like, this is... just butters.
But that's can't go to the skate park with this, man.
Parents are probably parents do. That's wicked, man. And then what about for you?
Well, I'd say maybe big influence for me, my old, like, next door neighbour, who was probably about 4 years older than me.
Nice.
So when I was about 9 or 10, like, he was already listening to a lot of hip hop, and it was like, I remember getting given the Fugees album when I was like 8 or 9 years old, and it was literally like, I'd just go to his house every day and he'd just be playing tunes, and it's like, still to this day, I couldn't tell you all the records that we were listening to, but it definitely just like put me onto that. He was a big influence to me.
Being out of home and out of school, so it wasn't a school friend. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't something your mum or your dad were playing with you. You were going around to, and he was an older kid. And when you hang around with older kids, it's always like, what are they on? That's how they're doing. What are they doing?
Yeah, 100%. And
so
like,
hip hop was probably the first.
Well, yeah, and also like we used to rollerblade together.
Okay,
and then that was like, through him I met a lot of other people. It's like he used to take me, we used to go up into, you know, St Paul's, South Bank, all of that, and then that was when I moved to Herne Hill. I moved away from him, but it turned out he knew some of the boys from around there anyway, so I kind of stayed in touch. It was Xander as well, Flip Tricks from High Focus.
Oh, right, yeah.
I used to skate with him loads, innit? And his little brother, they used to live around the corner from me. So it's like, I just remember he used to give me like fucking tokes on Zoots when I was like young, innit? I was like, yeah, this guy's a G. And he was the one that got me into painting early on as well.
Because he used to bomb as well,
didn't he? Yeah, yeah. I can distinctly remember coming on the train back from Herne Hill from Blackfriars, and he's doing insides and he's like, oh, what's your tag? And I was like, I don't know, innit?
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, you need to fucking get one now, innit? And it's like, that kind of put me onto the whole grafting, basically.
So he was your neighbour?
He wasn't my original neighbour, but he knew him, and when I moved,
he
lived nearby as well, and his little brother was a mate of mine in school. Yeah, so again, it was always like, the people a few years older that were influencing us quite a lot.
Always eye-openers, man. And you either come into it naturally, you grow up, and you come into things naturally, and you hit 15, 16, and you all of a sudden shit sparks. So then if you're lucky enough to know somebody who's 15, 16, and you're young, you're 11 or whatever, and you get involved. I grew up in an estate, so I always had older people around me. I saw a lot of older people do shit. I'm like, oh, I'm going to get involved. So I was like, but yeah, otherwise we walk into it casually, so it's nice to have an elder about.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, you know, you wouldn't be hanging around unless you had the friend to introduce you in a way.
Yeah.
You get the pass, innit, when you've got a friend who's older than you to hang around with other people that you look up to. Otherwise, they're just like, no, you're just, you know, you're just a little kid.
You
leave
can't
us
turn
alone.
Up by yourself.
Yeah, like, exactly.
Hi, my name's Will. I'd like to join. No, fuck off. Get out. Who are you? Give me that first. Bus pass as well, please. Now you can go. Walk home. That's what would happen.
But I will say, I mean, I think from like rollerblading with Xander and that, like, it's like we just travel around a lot.
Mm.
So it's like it got us out of South. Like, and that, you know, visually you just see London, I guess, and it's like going up to West London to go to PlayStation and stuff. It's like, there was so much going on that you're just like, you know, what is all,
so,
you know,
what years were you going to PlayStation?
This would have been like 2001, maybe 2002.
Do you know who was working there? Will Robson Scott was working at PlayStation, like, pretty much full time.
Yeah, it was like proper back, like, it would have been. Yeah, between year 2000 until about 2003, probably.
Amazing, yeah.
About
crazy. That place gets brought up a lot, and so does South Bank.
So yeah, they are. I mean, they're the centre of a lot of.
Yeah, because I mean, riding brought me up to London.
Yeah, so what, I was about to literally go on to that next.
Well, no, at this point in Kent.
Okay, so now you're down in Kent, so you're even closer to the city.
Yeah.
And so you're still, you're on this BMX thing. Did you get a bike by then?
Yeah, my mum eventually bought me one. I kind of fell away from it, and then at school, this other guy was really into riding. Uh-huh. So, like, me and him just sort of stayed buddies, and then they built a skate park in a local town. And then that's when I started to meet other people that were doing it, and that's when I started to get into graph and hip-hop. And
so how old were you then?
So 14.
13, 14,
And then really got into it sort of 15, 16, 17, 18, that sort of age.
Those years then, like the moulding years, aren't they?
And then, like, because we were at an age, like me and my sort of group of friends, where we were, you know, we were just either passing our driving tests or we're figuring out that we can get a train to the other side of the country. So we were taking our bikes on missions because we had a purpose to go to these places. Like, I was head of this skate park here, or this street spot there, or this, that and the other. And yeah, you end up just going on the wildest sort of adventures.
Man, culture is the one, because in you start collecting vinyl. So you go to your local record shop, and then all of a sudden you find yourself on the other side of the city, then you find yourself in another town. Same with graffiti, you're looking, going around to get up. Same with skating, you're trying to find the next fucking rail to ride, and BMX. It's culture, literally. The moment you get into one, you're just straight away out of where you're from, and you're seeing so much stuff.
Yeah,
that's wicked. So how old were you when you found like the London spots? What were you doing? Were you painting as well at the same time, or?
I painted more. Like, I got introduced to painting by a few friends, like tagging mainly.
Yeah.
And then I just really used to like bombing. They all kind of got into painting pieces and shit. And this was about probably the age from about 16 to about 20.
Okay.
And then I got arrested a few times.
Right.
And then the last time I got my house raided, and for me, I was just like, actually. It took the wind out of me, because I'd realised how seriously they were taking it.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was just like, you know, I'm just like painting a few characters and putting up a few dubs, and for me it was really fun, and it was, you know, it kept me alive. It kept me kind of looking at places that made me want to, you know, creep around at night and explore. Yeah. And then realising that, you know, shit, they are serious. I kind of maybe want to take this energy and like direct it into something a bit more.
What did you walk into?
Fruitful. Screen printing.
Wow, straight from that then, yeah.
Not straight, but
led into it.
It started off by painting on hats.
Okay, yeah.
I mean, I remember coming up to your store in Brighton with my mate and like just seeing what you created there, and it was a massive inspiration, you know.
Safe, man.
Like, yeah, seriously, and music as well, because you had all, you know, you had all the underground UK hip hop stuff selling there, and you couldn't really get it in, because I'm from a little town in Kent, you know, there's not much there. It was great to sort of be exposed to that and influenced by it, and then kind of lost my train of thought now.
But just going into screen printing, it was basically what had happened was that you'd found culture with bikes, with BMX in, that introduced you to open your eyes to a bit more to the streets, and then you saw graffiti, you were like, yeah, me and my mates are going to get on this, and you start tagging, and then this is a fit. It's just being in something will then inevitably lead on. So then there was a few little bits and pieces in between.
I remember where I was now. It was going to a shop, seeing like you'd painted on shirts and hats, and I was just like, shit, you know, I can do that. I know how to use a paintbrush. I can master this. And that's when it was actually painting on clothes by hand, which made me think, like, yeah, this is something I really want to do. I want to make garms. And also from the BMX world, like, it's all, the majority of it's DIY. I mean, the first BMX companies that were developed in the sort of 70s, 80s, they were all rider. A lot of them were kind of like, their dads were engineers, so they were making the bike parts. But then you got, with Matt Hoffman, you know, you got them, like, riders, actually, and Bob Harrow, riders creating companies, and then it started this whole thing in the late 90s.
That all really starts from no money, and, you know, having to do it yourself, and literally, I couldn't afford printing, that's why I hand-painted shit. I was just like, I ain't got any money for that shit.
So. Yeah, and I remember hand-painting so many things, right, and thinking there's got to be a faster way to do this, and I remembered from when I was at college, they did a screen printing class, and I didn't really do much in it, but I just remembered the process, so I went on YouTube, and I was just like, screen printing. And then just like basically learn how to screen print on YouTube.
Wicked.
And by this point, I'd moved up to London. I decided to like move up to the city because I had a friend who had a house or had a room spare in a house. So I moved up to Camberwell.
We're gonna get to that. Wicked. What about you, then?
Wait,
so you're basically, yeah, you're 9, 10, 11.
Well, that's what I mean.
Starting to travel,
yeah,
to school,
and then it was like early teens, it's like definitely it was like the kind of skating, getting around town, and then that kind of definitely moved into graph, yeah, and then it was like, you know, that definitely went hard on that for a few years.
And so the graffiti thing, was that, again, walking around London, inevitably in the early 2000s, city was smashed, the undergrounds were fucking stained to fuck.
Yeah, I mean, one of my main earliest probably memories of graph was getting the train in from Herne Hill up into Victoria, because I used to have a mate that lived in Pimlico, so I used to go to school near there, so I used to go back and forth, and it was like Battersea Halls of Fame, you know, and it was like, I always used to remember, like, I'd just look out the window there being like, I couldn't work out what it was, but I wanted to know more about it.
It was kind of like...
Yeah, and then and then it was like, suddenly you realise you're with people that are doing this, and you're like, that's it, you just want to do it as well.
Chapter 2, Culture. Both Will and Tom, in their own ways, started to delve deeper into cultures and head off to further education. Art and graphic design seemed to be the appropriate routes. They each have their own experience with the education system and looked outside of that to make their next moves. Raving, forest parties and foreign lands forged good friendships, and we talk the importance of their first jobs and what led them to utilising their love for screen printing.
Suddenly you realise you're with people that are doing this, and you're like, that's it, you just want to do it as well.
So there's classmates and skaters?
Yeah. And then I think in, you know, when I was sort of 15, innit, I kind of met a lot more other people in London from sort of different schools and shit through friends, and it was like, you know, they're all doing similar things. But then definitely there was a point then where it's like, at that point, 16, 17, it's like you start focusing more on going out and like going to raves, and like the graphing wasn't the main thing, like, oh yeah, we're going to go and do this. Yeah, it's like there was a big dip, and it was like...
Girls, drugs, and
ecstasy,
music,
man.
Well, that's,
you know,
Saturday,
I mean?
Night.
Drum and bass, basically.
When you used to plan that Saturday night with your pals, and you'd be like, "We're gonna get this trackside. There's a boom bridge. We're gonna get there at 11. We can have an hour. It's gonna be amazing." And you're 15 years old, and you're like, "Sick." We're all staying at your house, and everyone's like, "Sick." And then you hit 16, 17, that same Saturday night, and you're like, "There's enough girls in that club."
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
There's some mad shit I've been taking recently, and it fucking makes me feel amazing. Me and my mates on that shit, and then
but then also, having said that, Fabric was probably like Fabric and Mass in Brixton, Fabric in town, those were the clubs that we were going to, and it's like that was like, I first went Fabric when I was like 15, and from 15 to like 17 we'd go there a lot, and again, that I met a lot of people there, like loads, innit, because everyone's high, innit, and wants to chat. Everyone, so it's like, I've still got friends from those days that I wouldn't have met, I don't think, through that, who I probably actually work with creatively now. So it's like, there's still like connections coming from there, which have been good. And then I think, you know, like that's when that started, like, you know, drying up a little bit. And that was when I moved to Leeds for uni, like when I was like 19. The dubstep scene was proper popping off, and we were just like, you know, DMZ fucking fanatics, basically, same sort of thing. And then I don't know, like up there it's like I started painting really again, innit, and I met a few other people that were kind of on graphing who were like mainly it was people I'd meet from London, but people who were from like north or west or east, because like, even though there was like the kind of clubbing and stuff, it was generally most of my circles were focused around people in South.
Yeah. I mean, that's definitely, when I mean, I was in Brighton when I had the shop down there, and you'd notice that the uni, that's where North, South, East and West would meet. Like, it wasn't, you know, you get all sides going to the city, to these different unis around the country.
Yeah, exactly.
You do get to explore the city. Did you go to uni?
Yeah, I did, but a lot later.
A lot later?
Yeah.
Oh, so you'd been in Kent.
Yeah, I went to an art school called Caiad. I think it's changed now, but I went there, Canterbury and Maidstone.
Yeah.
Did a BTEC national diploma straight after doing GCSEs. So instead of going to A-levels, I was just like...
Yeah.
I remember there was this punk kid that in my village, and he had like mad spikes and shit coming out of his face.
Yeah.
And he went to the art college, and I remember having a chat with him one day. He was like smoking hash suits. And just blowing smoke in my face, going, "Yeah, art college is great. Oh, you get to just fuck around." I was like, "Sick, man, this sounds great. Yeah, you know, I just paint pictures and do what the fuck I want." So I did that, and then by the end of it, I was just like, actually, they kept pushing to go to uni, and I was just like, by that point, I discovered drugs, like, you know, yeah. just taking a lot of magic mushrooms. It's really like fucking just losing my mind. Like, really, like in the countryside, you know, you've yeah. got fields, you can pick them. It's free yeah. drugs, man. Yeah. You can like. You can stack bags of mushrooms.
You've got lovely dry them places out, to sit then, down and watch and yeah, yeah, stare. Yeah.
It's a different world. I mean, but yeah, I got really into that. And going to squat parties, like we used to drive up to South London, uh-huh. go squat parties in like, the old warehouses. And also, you know, in the countryside, you had used to have the techno parties in the woods
yeah.
before they all started getting shut down. And they were like, they were heavy. They were like mini festivals
yeah.
Deep in the fucking countryside. They were great. But yeah, so doing that and, you know, getting my brain a bit mixed up, I didn't really know which direction I wanted to go in, especially yeah. like, you know, having to choose your, you know, your world, essentially.
Yeah, who
like,
do you want to be at that age? Yeah, isn't it? Like, what direction should I go in?
I don't even know who I am. Yeah. Like, fuck, what do I want to do? Why do I want to make that decision now? I so wonder, I travelled and worked.
I wonder if it wasn't for culture, when you do start thinking about, oh, what am I meant to do, is that the time when people who haven't found a culture tune into that 9-to-5 world, two kids, house. Do they,
possibly,
maybe that's
possibly,
the choice.
Possibly, yeah. Where it's like, you know,
anyway. Yeah, that becomes.
No, I think
culture.
I think the thing is as well is that people. It's like if you suddenly start getting a job, but you start getting paid quite well, then that's it. You've just yeah. gone down that road, aren't you?
Yeah, I mean,
whereas if you go from the route where you decide that what you want to do is first to what you're getting paid,
yeah,
it's a longer road, but you know, it's more.
I suppose as well by then. There was, yeah. You kind of know. Look, man, this is a. It's going to be hard fucking work, but I can. For me,
like deciding what I wanted to do came later. Like
What did you do in uni?
I did graphic design at uni, okay, yeah. but that decision really. Like I went to LCC after for a year for a foundation because
right.
my art teachers at school were like, yeah, you should definitely do that, and it was like, well, it was free at the time, yeah. so it's like, may as well.
Yeah.
You know, it was quite fun. Didn't really have to do much.
That was after kind of, school?
After school, yeah. Between school and uni. Yeah. And then it was like, I didn't know what else to do.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? And it was like, so I knew that I wanted to leave London at that point because yeah. I was like, I just needed to get away from my parents and just do my own thing. So I kind of thought, okay, well, this course seems like the one course that I can probably, like, stick out.
Mm-hmm.
And do you know what? That course didn't do shit for me, really, apart from show me the graphic design that I don't want to do.
Right.
it left me, like, leaving uni quite, like, disheartened with the whole thing. I didn't have a portfolio that I liked the work from,
yeah.
and all the kind of spiel was like, you need to go to ad agencies and get this job and that job, and there's fucking pressure, yeah? And it was just, like, I kind of just, like, ended up doing a job that was... required a little bit of Photoshop and Illustrator skills, but was basically just like hands-on, like making signs and shit yeah. like that. And that, when I was doing that, that was when I suddenly started thinking, you know, I want to start making my own stuff.
I want to do this myself.
And deciding to be like, I don't know, it goes back to what you were saying about how a lot of the skating culture was like, the brands we were buying when we were like 13 weren't yeah. like... big global things.
Yeah,
they were
like
quite DIY
own, like, trainers.
So it made me think that you can, you know, you can make something that people will buy that doesn't have to be like,
and you can do
massive,
it
do you know what I mean?
Like you can build it up from buying blank shirts and paintbrushes.
Mate,
lots of paint.
For me, it was there was a couple of things that happened in the mid-90s, and one of them was a BT advert. It was BT or British Airways, and it pissed me the fuck off. And I was young, and I'd been bumming writing for about 2 years or so. And I said, this advert, anyway, I think it was British Airways, and they basically tagged up the whole plane. And I knew that they weren't genuine tags. And I was like, you fucking bastards. And I was blaming British Airways. It obviously wasn't them, it was the ad people. But I was literally, I was like, you fucks. Like, and for some reason, at 15, I thought, 16, I was like, right, something's going to happen here. I'm taking them jobs. I'm going to make
that
money.
Yeah.
And then also, in Kilburn, like the old school crew from Manor was called Nonstop, with State of Art, Bunny, and then Fade 101 and Kane. And these OGs, basically, from the 80s. They had this little studio around the corner from my estate, and a friend of mine had been there. And he's like, oh my God, he got this airbrush t-shirt, basically. He can't rock it back onto the estate. I'm like, where the fuck is that from? And I'm all graffiti then. Anyway, I walk around and I walk into this fucking room. And it's State of Art and Kane sitting there airbrushing some t-shirts, and they're fucking producing t-shirts. They're doing t-shirt one-off pieces for like Arnold Schwarzenegger and Mariah Carey, and they'd smash the street scene, all hand-done stuff. And I was like, Oh my god, I still didn't know I was going to do it, but I think it gave me a bit of a spark and some hope
that people can do.
Yeah, and I was literally 2 years in, like, and the reason I did my business was a completely different reason, but the point was I knew there was something there.
It kind of makes you realise that you can use what you've got and create something.
Yeah.
So you don't have to, you don't have to join a class of people or a group. You can actually create your own.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, just for your mates. I definitely saw that. I think as well, just from influences slightly close to home, like I was saying, like, you know, older people that are doing stuff. I felt like for a point after uni, I was working in a job. And like I saw these people I knew doing, and I just was jealous. I was like, I want to do my own thing.
So
like,
did you see HQs then? I suppose.
Yeah. That used to be really close to my gaff, exactly. And that was like, again, like that. Yeah, I'm not gonna lie. Buying a zombie T-shirt put me on to wanting to make T-shirts from early.
Blame like me. That and tunnel vision range was sick as well.
And it's like that. That again, innit? It's like you know, innit, that these lot aren't like some global fucking franchise, and it makes you realise that there is stuff out there that is for people like us that want to make stuff. There's a market for it, and you can make your own shit and fucking get away
and
with it.
And the scene will applaud it and love it. And obviously, there's hate and all types of shit. But I know it's hard to sell everything, and we sit here making these products, and we don't sell out all of them. It's annoying. But the point is that the culture is there, and they fucking love it, and they participate, and they represent. And
I mean, it's where I think a lot of the great ideas come from.
Yeah.
But also, again, I think there's a determination, that you can, if you've ever been part of like the graph scene in London and like the competitive nature of it, that, like I said, maybe I had fallen away from it a little bit, but just knowing that, like, incentive, you know, that drive, that kind of, you can channel them same energies to what you're doing, and it's like, I want to see as many people wearing my tees as opposed to like I want to see as many of my tags around.
Yeah,
and it's like it's funny how a lot of the people I know who are doing their own shit now did go through that culture when they were younger. You know what I mean?
If there is any, you know, if you're not going to go and do a marketing degree, graffiti will fucking teach you a thing or two at least. It won't give you a marketing degree. It won't make you fully understand it, but we do kind of get the picture a bit. And
it gives you
shout about yourself.
You know how to promote, and you know how to fucking like, I'm doing that.
Well, it's like when you're told,
and then using the thing you just said about seeing an opportunity and taking it, and it's the same thing you do with graffiti. But it's like you use that formula, like of the shit that you do as a graffiti writer. You're like, hang on 1 minute, that energy,
step on that bin and get that reach.
All of that and the mindset,
but
and
it's
all
the refusal to accept
it.
The refusal to like take no for an answer. Like when people are like, oh, that'll never work, innit, you'll never be able to do that, that'll never work. It's like, yeah, but that's what, like when I used to like ask like my mate, like how did that happen on the other side? Oh, you'd never be able to do that. And then a few years later there you are doing it.
You've noticed someone else has done it. What do you mean I can't?
It's not limiting yourself basically. Which I think definitely like helps, the competitiveness in a way. It's like it's a good thing to get things going, innit. I don't feel now like we're in some competitive environment in that sense. Like we actually, like, it's more like most people that like I work with now, it's like we're all trying to push each other on, as opposed to being like, I'm better than you, or I've got,
I think,
you know.
What it carries now, like the business side of the culture, what it carries is an inevitable you want to do better than the rest, because we're from a culture that brings, and hip hop for one, graffiti for another, skating, you always want to be better than someone else, whatever it is. There is always that edge, but it seems to be we've all grown to then just learn to support and want to support because we understand the benefit of it. We saw what happened with graffiti as well. Just like we all fucking, for instance, just an example of the Big Met and the Little Met in early 2000s was smashed, and it was smashed by everyone. Like everyone took part, and we all saw the fucking benefits of it because we all saw purple and blue all over those insides, and we fucking loved it, and we all played a part, and there was hardly any beefs over those 2 or 3 years. And the lines look sick, and we all work together, and we see that bonus, and then you see the same as we grow up, and we end up walking into businesses, and you're like, I fucking hate some of my competitors, but in a business fashion, and that's it. I respect their hustles, like whoever's like me and what I do in my business.
I mean, I think also nowadays for us, it's like we are, you know, like obviously we are out there as like a clothing brand, but you know, we're a studio, we do a lot of printing, and it's always been a word of mouth thing, and that's a thing where it's like you want to hear you want to see what people are bringing to the table, as opposed to like just writing them off and being like, I don't want to work with that person. It's bring everyone through. Do you know what I mean? Because the more we're doing, the better.
Yeah.
But then obviously, you know, after doing it for a few years, then you start just leveling out and working out what's kind of better.
Fall off as well over those times.
Yeah, yeah.
So you've done uni, you've come to London, and so you've learnt to, you decided to start printing after you've been arrested a few times in Kent. You were like, fuck it, I'm going to do this print thing. After a bit, you kind of found this avenue.
So after I got arrested, I was probably about the last time, this is the third time, that's when I had to go to court and everything. I was about 21 and I'd got fed up with where I was. I'd worked for a framers, like a high-end picture framers, 3 years. By that point, or 2 years, I can't remember now, but basically you talk about the competitive nature of graffiti, like I kind of, where I was from, I didn't really get that. I was basically one writer out of a handful, so I didn't really have that edge, and that's not what pushed me on, like, but working in a really, really high-end professional environment, that's what actually gave me the work ethic and drive that I've got. And it also gave me the job that I got when I moved to London. So I moved up to the city when I was about 23, I think. So, and I lived in the Caribbean as well. A mate of mine moved out there. So I just fucking worked my ass off, saved up money, got a credit card. Just sold everything, sold my car, like the lot. I was just like, Mum, not coming home. See you later.
You came to London,
I moved there when I was 21, so it was the first time I fucking moved out of home, actually. I was just like,
straight to Caribbean.
fucking beach. It was a big learning curve, and that's when I was, you know, I took loads of paints with me, took paint brushes, and I was painting on hats for people. I had a little laptop because I'd, you know, come out of first college and I'd learned how to use Photoshop and stuff, so I was doing bits and bobs for people. It got to a point, I mean, it's a funny story why I came back. It was basically, I had a hangover, immigration knocked on my door and I was staying there illegally. I didn't answer the door because I had a hangover, and then I sort of had this moment, I was just like, I need to go back to England because I can't do what I want to do here. I just went straight to my mates, used the internet, and bought a flight home. Spent another year working in Kent, and then I moved up to London.
Okay.
And I moved up.
And what were you thinking when you were in the Caribbean, that you want to go back to do what?
I want to make t-shirts. That was in my head. And that's when I was just like, I remembered from college the screen printing things we'd done. And that's when I started to research it and look into how to do it. Built a few bits of equipment, like the light box, which is only just stopped using. It's just like almost, you know, close to a decade old.
Sick.
Just a tiny little fucking thing. So moved up to the city when I was 23 and was working for an art installation company.
Oh, yeah.
And that was, you know, it was pretty serious work.
Uh-huh.
It was really, we were doing massive, massive installations, and I was like really having to learn how to, you know, work, you know, to a really, really professional degree, but fast as well.
So is this like offices, artworks, and like?
No, this is like stuff at Somerset House.
We used to work for
the Houses of Parliament doing their rehangs. Yeah. Like serious artwork, man. We'd handle works worth more than I can even want to think about. You know, like really, really expensive shit in people's houses in West London, like around Chelsea and Fulham Broadway. Was it Fulham Broadway? Yeah, Fulham area. Yeah. Just like, you know, real expensive stuff. And high-end stuff, and we'd fabricate sculptures as well. That taught me a hell of a lot. It enabled me to build the studio that we're now in.
Yeah, so that gave you money?
That gave me money. Yeah. Also, that was around the time of the recession.
Uh-huh.
So I was up here for about a year working, then lost a lot of work, and by that point I'd earned enough money to buy some screen printing equipment. Finally, I'm just like, yeah.
Wicked.
And it's some wicked printing stuff. I don't know if you
Wicked printing, you know, man. I fucking
that yellow,
props.
Like...
Yellow one, man. That's fucking duns, man. Wicked printing set up. People.
Yeah. So they sorted me out with that, and in my front room in this grotty little house in Camberwell, that's where it all began for me. Like, that's when I learned how to screen print from doing the tutorials online. And I was living with students that were going to like Camberwell Uni to LCC and to all of the other little ones.
And then is that how you met them?
No, like around that sort of time, It's like I'd been out of uni for like about a year. Or maybe, I don't know if it was even a year. It's like basically I got a job working, doing like window displays and gallery work at Sotheby's.
Oh,
like,
nice.
Like again, not as like hands-on as what Tom was doing, but do you know what I mean, being in that art kind of world and just kind of being there and like doing it part-time and kind of just thinking, wait, like this isn't what am I doing innit? And just basically wanted to try and print my own shirts, and I went around
giving you that idea.
I'd done it like years ago, yeah, with like fucking stencils and spray paint, do you know what I mean, when I was like 16, because we were like, yeah, we're going to make our own fucking like our own fucking t-shirts, do you know what I mean. And like also I'd done a little bit of screen printing at LCC, and that was something I think in my uni degree everything became just like on computers, and I got quite disengaged with it. And I was like yeah, I need to just, I just want to just make some teas, and like I didn't really have any ideas, I just knew I wanted to do it.
Yeah.
And I tried to find a few places. Like I went and had a look at that print club in Dalston, and they were like, yeah, £100 a month, you know what I mean, this, that and whatever. And I was just like, nah, fuck this. I was like, I need to find my own fucking spot.
That's where I learned to paint. And I was there for 4 years actually.
And I went
cheaper than that.
I basically had someone I knew from like years before was opening some studios in Peckham, and I kind of just like on the off chance was like, oh, is anyone doing any screen printing there? Can I get involved? And that was when she had put me in touch with Tom.
Yeah, this is interesting. This is like, so by this point, I had moved, like, so I decided to go to college.
Yeah.
This is probably about 24, and I went to LCC because I was living with students. They told me about different courses that were going on.
Yeah.
And LCC held a course that was for, it's called surface design, but it had loads of screen printing involved with it. So I was like, fuck it, you know. I saw my mates like getting all of these like term payouts to live and get all their shit paid for, and I was just like, I want some of that free money. Yeah. So that's what I managed to get on the course. A whole other story, like really, like loads of weird things happened, and I managed to get onto this course after I'd been in London about a year, and I just learned how to screen print, got on this course. And the first term, because I'd got on the course so late, like I just had this huge influx of money that just came in. It was probably like $3,000 or $4,000, and I just remember sitting at home, and I was just like,
I've got to
do something with this. What can I do? And I didn't really like the house I was living in. Went to a party in East London. I think it was like near Canary Wharf. Always forget the name of the Limehouse. That was it. Went to this party in this sort of like warehousey type building, and met this guy called Johnny who was running a digital printers, and they had a little space. So I just moved in there. I used the money that I had, bought more equipment, moved in there for about 8 months, and then they kicked me out. Like not in a bad way.
It was just time to go. Yeah,
that they wanted to expand their printing business, and I like basically moved all my shit back to Kent, but I moved to Peckham, where I was finishing off my last year at college. And I was ready, like this is where it gets interesting, I was ready to just sell it all and just think, fuck it, I'm going to do something else with my life. I'm going to finish college and whatever. And that's when a mutual friend of Will and I's, Roja, her partner at the time, Dash is his name.
Yeah.
He introduced me to Will, a guy called Finn, and a guy called Matt. And that's when I met Will, and we set up a little studio in Peckham.
Sick.
And we were there.
So there was someone from Print Club went to Peckham as well. And open a print studio.
Yeah, there is the Peckham Print Club.
Yeah,
but that's the thing. Like we don't.
He was on my course. I've never met. He was on the BA version of my.
I mean, we had a tiny little room. Yeah, where it was like we had I don't know, that old carousel was like, what was it, a four colour one or something? And we had a tiny little carousel.
Came from Leeds, actually.
We still got the bathtub that we used to wash out then in the place we've got now. But it was definitely a thing where it was like that place. I remember like we were all put. There was like five of us involved, and we were all putting in a little bit of money. But it turned out that it was like me and Tom were the people using it the most. And then when that space, like you decided to move to Greg's, isn't it? But because he just didn't want to cut me out, so he was like, come and use that spot.
So listen, so what's happened is then, so you've come into some dough and you're at LCC and you're find this little space, and what are you printing in the back of the printing room?
Just t-shirts.
For who? Is it your own brand, or did you start a brand, or are you just doing tees for people?
To start with, it was just like I wanted to do it.
Yeah.
It's just like I didn't know what I was going to do it for. Like I had a mate that I was living with in Camberwell who's from Luxembourg, and he had this thing called Sour Cream.
Uh-huh.
But he's like a little collective he started with his mates up there. so he was kind of doing that. And I had something that I was, when I was in the Caribbean painting on hats and stuff, uh-huh. I had this little brand called Fading, uh-huh. and I was trying to do that, but I didn't really like.
So you were just printing.
Yeah, and then I was trying to do it more as a business because that's the.
What you thought was the right thing to do.
In a way, because I didn't really have a direction
I'm
to
gonna
go
be
in.
A printer. I'm not even going to assign this to a culture. I'm not going
to... Kind of. I was trying to do my own thing, but to be honest with you, I think back then I just didn't really know what I wanted to do.
Yeah.
But I knew that I wanted to do...
Yeah, I can do this and make some money.
Well, yeah, it's creating something for yourself.
And then you two me. And then what did you two start printing together?
No,
well, still just pushing five of you.
We met in that studio, and then, like I said, like everyone was using it a bit, but it was really close to where I was living.
Yeah.
And like I was actually living back home with my parents, so for me it was like I spend fucking every night here, fucking smoking weed, printing teas, because it's just like get away from it all.
And
I was just kind of plodding along doing my own thing, and then it was like I printed a Southbound tee and put it online, and then it was like boom, I was like, right, people want to buy this shit.
So that wasn't even within the brand.
That was before. And originally I was like, fuck it, I'm just going to call it Southbound. And then I was like, wait, no, because I'm cutting out everyone else from London.
Don't want to get you yet. But yeah, that was sick. So that was the first tee.
Yeah. And then, well, I'd done a couple more, like, kind of hip-hop inspired, like, Biggie tees and shit. Nothing original at all, really. And then I did those.
You're still finding your feet.
And that kind of, well, that just sort of led me to think, like, right, like, people actually, you know, there's stuff that you can make that's going to sell. And I kind of basically Tom decided to move out of that studio, and it was his equipment, but he could have just said, you know, that's it, see you later.
So you were just being cool.
I just saw...
Help pay the rent, but the stuff's here to use it.
So when we were in Peckham together, I remembered what I was actually using the studio for. It was for college work.
Okay.
So primarily doing college stuff, But what I wanted to do with it, like, long term, it wasn't like I was setting up a brand. Like my pal from college, Greg, who we ended up moving to Hackney with, me and him came up with this idea to actually have a printing studio, because he printed on paper, I printed on t-shirts, and we thought if we combine these two kind of ideas together, we can start up a business. And we had ideas to rent the studio out because we had all this equipment and do jobs for people. And then because Will was just like nailing it and doing his thing, I thought, you know, bring him along. And then we all kind of stayed together. We all just did his own thing. Mm-hmm. But
so you're doing the South.
Yeah, well, it's like basically like I was living like fucking right down in Clapham South at that time, and it was like Tom just basically offered to me like, look, man, if you want to still use the space, just come up and it will work out. You pay us for the day or whatever.
So those knees t-shirts as well, were they done around then? The Garfield ones?
That was a bit later. Okay, but cool. I think he did some with another printer before we worked with him.
Okay.
Cool. But
so this was around 2011.
2012, 11.
And then you move up to the Wick.
Yeah, moved up to the Wick in probably the end of 2011. Uh-huh. And then we moved out of the Wick at the beginning of 2013.
Right, okay, so you're up there for a year. You live in
it. But in the Wick, it was like, for me, it was like, I basically, like, you gave me the opportunity to use the studio, and I just fucking took that. Do you know what I mean? I was living in South, and I was working in the West End, I used to go to work, and then I'd go to there, and I'd be like, I'd carry the t-shirts to work, that I'd bought. I'd take them up there, and then I'd be like, right, I've got to try and bang this all out in a night. And then, like you said, there was always people, like, wanting to chat shit, and I'd be like, bruv, I've got to fucking get this done before the last train, otherwise I'm stuck in Hackney all night. I'd do it, like, I'd be there, like, not on a daily basis, but when I'd try and go, I'd try and, like, do as much as I could. And it was just like, you know, I just was determined, I think, at that point to just do it. And it was like, I'd been given what I thought was like
an opportunity
that I couldn't turn down. It's like, I couldn't find anywhere else that I was going to do it. And it was like, great, I'll just carry on. And then kind of grew into the fact of, like, I then started getting people requesting jobs. Like, can you print this? Can you print that?
I remember that when the Southbound tee dropped, and wherever it appeared, Hurty Bird, most probably, or somewhere else, it was like, that was inevitable, then you were going to become that guy. Like, and I was saying the same thing to Will Robson Scott recently. It was just like, he done Crack and Shine, and then he was the photographer. Of our culture, in this city, if you ever wanted a photo or a portrait photo done, you'd go to Will Robson Scott. That's all you'd want that.
Yeah.
And it became, I remember that time, it was like, if you want a tee done, you need to go and see Will and get that tee printed, because you were making moves there. And
yeah, no, and I think, I mean, it was lucky for me, innit? It was just a few things, like a few people like basically like backed it in the right way, and then that kind of snowballed into us getting lots of requests for jobs. Okay. And then,
so now you're in South, you're back in
no,
South.
No, like this is, I'd started bringing jobs to the Hackney studio.
The way me and Greg from college, the guy from college, wanted to run the space in Hackney is it was basically me, Greg, Will, and a guy called Alex Eveson, who's like a drum and bass DJ.
Yeah, I know that name.
Yeah, Eveson, he runs under that. Yeah, he does basically.
Okay.
But yeah, so it was us four. Mainly it was Greg, Alex and myself. Like Will, I kind of don't think
I wasn't on the like tenancy. It was like one of those things. At first it was like, I remember coming here and I was like, this is a dream come true. I'd be like, I'd use the studio for a day and I'd be like, how much I got given? You'd be like, oh, like a tenner. Do you know what I mean? And it was just like, fucking safe. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Okay, I've got a few of my own inks and stuff. Yeah. Have those on the wall, innit? Use them as you please. But it was just an amazing opportunity. Do you know what I mean? So
I just really went
in for it. Yeah, and then I think I started getting jobs, and then I'd be like, okay, cool, I've got this job, so how about I come and print this job, but I'll give you guys the money from the job, and then it's like, I get another day's use out of the studio.
Wicked.
And I just carried on going for it, really, and then...
And who are you getting jobs from then? Writers?
Just a kind of a mix.
Designers,
like, do you know what I mean?
Young
a mix.
People looking to start
Yeah,
brands.
Like one of the first jobs I did was for BNTL, like their tees, and like obviously they were kind of popping off at that time.
Yeah,
BNTL
so, blog.
And Chicken Cottage one.
Chicken Cottage one, and the Panic as well.
Who does it?
It's a girl called Sarah.
That was one of the first ones, And like Panic as well. Yeah, so the studio in Hackney Wick, I was going there. I was basically dedicated to just printing, and I'd already... I think it's like I'd done the Southbound stuff, and it was like I got introduced to Darren from Chrome and Black, and I went into the shop and he was like, do you know what, I've seen that tee about, and obviously he's from South, so I think he just wanted one for himself, so he was like, look, I'll stop them in the shop, and they were like, yeah, do East, West and North as well, and I was like, alright, yeah, cool.
Chapter 3, Creativity. The guys have figured out a good route to their plans. They understand the hard work needed to get things off the ground, and with opportunities arising, they take the bull by the horns and start a brand. The friendship and respect they have for each other meant they could take the roles and run with it, whilst always keeping an eye on the culture that nurtured them. They talk about their own designs, collaborating with artists, and also providing a service to pay the bills, and their door open policy for artists to come and work on ideas with them. We also hear about their next steps and what the future holds for the brand.
They were like, yeah, do East, West and North as well. And I was like, all right, yeah, cool. And then, but then I didn't have a brand name. Yeah. So I can remember clearly like being with my mate in the pub, good mate of mine, Jack, and he was like, bruv, you need to just get this shit done now and get it in the shop. And then he was like, fuck it, just call it that. And I was just like, do you know what? I've been going over names for a couple of weeks. I was like, it's short, it sounds kind of all right. I kind of hate it. Yeah. I kind of hated it at the start, yeah. And I was just like, fuck it, though, I'll just do it.
Because it was a bit flippant.
Well, I don't know, innit? It's just a bit like it's suddenly a thing, innit?
I mean,
and then it becomes something after you just stick to it. Yeah.
I haven't felt arrogance from that brand name. And, well, so look, you've called yourselves done. Chrome and Black say to you, right, do all sides, we'll take them. You go back to the studio and you tell Tom what?
Well, I think at that point, like, we weren't... We were still in Hackney Wick, yeah? So it's like, I kind of, at that point, I started doing it, and then I just suddenly got a few more orders, innit, from them being like, oh, yeah, do us, like, you know, 15 of each. I was like, all right, fuck it, yeah, I'm actually doing this now, do you know what I mean? I've got to print the label on.
So you've come up with the word done, and you're like...
Because I can remember, thinking, at that early stage, like, how am I going to sell this shit online? How am I going to do it? And everyone's like, oh, bruv, you got to get on this Facebook thing, you got to get on Twitter and all that. And I remember, like, starting a Twitter page, and then, like, 3 hours later, I deleted it. Because I was like, nah, like, what am I doing? That's just not the way of getting it out there that I want. But then, obviously, you know, that shit developed. At first, I was like, I just want to put up stickers and that'll be it.
How you spark it is one thing, man. Everything grows and things are inevitable. And we now own websites and Twitters and Instagrams and all that type of shit. But yeah, you wanted to start.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it was like, I just needed to have a name in it to kind of tie it all together. And it was literally only those four
what
t-shirts.
What made you pick Did you have the typeface that... No, the first, it was different, wasn't it?
No, I think I used... I did use the TF, the Underground Johnston
font. Straight away?
Yeah, yeah. It was just... It was not a very good version that I'd fucking found on the internet. Okay, do you know what I mean? So yeah. It's like a bit skinny.
By using and I wasn't as well.
I definitely wasn't, like... anything like as accomplished as a designer on a computer now, right. as I am now.
Yeah.
So it was all a bit like, do you know what I mean? There's definitely stuff that you can look back at and be like, rah, the spacing on that was fucked.
I'm thinking of one of the type tees you did, the artist type, but I'm thinking of one of his tees. His font, using the TFL font, was fucking genius because it based it straight away.
Yeah.
Because the word done, what the fuck? Like, type that into Google, I don't know what you'd get, a million and one.
Yeah, exactly. Responses
off the back of it, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, a dictionary.
But I remember people saying to me, they were like, what are you going to call it? Done what? Like, done clothing or done this? And I was like, I ended up putting London on it just because. It just was like, fuck it, I'll just say where it's from, innit? It's not, I don't know what it is, And then
that kind of
I don't know, it just sort of stuck in people's heads.
Yeah.
And obviously at that time I got then pretty obsessed with the underground and just started, I just was like, fucking hell, there's a load of amazing design on my doorstep that loads of people like me love. Yeah. So let's put it on clothes. Fucking so naive, because I was just like, yeah, whatever, I'm just some small time kid, innit? Like, I make 200 t-shirts, 50 of each of these, no one's gonna know. And then by this point, that first kind of where we did the seat patterns and all of that, that's sick. When me and Tom, we'd literally just moved into the studio in Lewisham, and that was like the beginning for us. We were like, this is the launch of us doing it together. Is like, because at that point I couldn't fathom being able to print those tees myself, because I didn't have the ability. So I was like, I need to work with you to get this stuff created.
Basically, while all this was happening, while we were doing the southbound, westbound stuff, me, Greg and Alex were working on building a business, mainly me and Greg, and we called it the Hidden Print Studio.
Right.
So we were trying to like get work in, and like Will brought in quite a lot of work for us to do.
So you're getting artists for paper for your mate, for Greg, and you're doing teams.
And I was doing teams.
Are you hiring out the space and wanting to?
A little bit.
It never really worked doing that because people just fuck it up.
People just fucked equipment up, so we decided not to do it. Yeah. But I was also still working in this installation company. So I finished college by this point.
Yeah.
Still working, so I was earning money.
Yeah.
And all my free time was basically either with my girlfriend at the time or in the studio.
Yeah.
So that's basically all I did. Put all of my energy into it, all of my money and stuff. And then where the transition happened, basically we got given notice on the studio that we just created after being there not even a year. We were told to get out. We were given like 3 or 4 months notice. And that's when I kind of had a bit of... Like, I just started questioning everything that I was doing, like the environment that I was working in, the people I was doing it with. And then me and Will sat down in January of 2013, and he showed me all of his ideas for the tube stuff. And I was just like, I remember going home just thinking, like, fuck, that's...
What sparked that? Why did you think?
I think we spoke about what I had ideas wise, and I had no idea that the studio in Hackney Wick was like I kind of did know that there was things going on. It might come to an end.
Business.
It was none of my business, innit? I wasn't a partner in that place, which I think probably actually helped me,
of course, man.
Because I didn't think about any of that. I just focused on what I was doing.
Yeah.
So it let that develop, and then it was like.
Yeah, there's a lot of politics.
I didn't have to get involved in any of that stress.
And this is the thing about going through issues like that. Look what happens in the end. Like, is the fact that you, going through all that stress, you're going through getting fucking given your 3 month notice, and maybe your plan with your friends hadn't really worked, and there's this, that, and the third. But you look over your shoulder and you're like, hang on.
Didn't think about that one. it was just a complete surprise to me.
Yeah.
Like, I met, because we had that conversation, and it was literally just kind of like,
this is what I'm doing.
Here chatting, like, chilling. And then I remember going home and then thinking, I knew I wanted to continue the studio. I knew I didn't want to do it in that part of London.
Yeah.
And then I sort of saw what, you know, me and Will had this conversation. He showed me what he was doing. And I was just like, fuck, I want to put my time into that. And I was, because up until that point, I'd been printing for everyone else.
Yeah.
I'd hardly done any of my own stuff.
Yeah.
And I was just like, actually, I want to give my time to people that I can, like, I see potential in, essentially. And yeah, so, as I just said, I remember sending Will a message just going, yeah, you up for having a, like, you know, some help with this? And then you
were yeah. And like, that was when, I think it was like, you kind of basically were like, fuck it, I'm going to move into the spot in Lewisham. And Tom actually lived there for the first year to basically be like, you were like, look, I'm going
to
live here. So like,
to save money. And
well, yeah, it was money, basically rather than coming to me and being like, do you want to take the space with me? You're going to have to pay this much, that much. You were like, I'm going to move into this place for a year. Come in with me and just use it and we'll just get it going. And it was definitely like, it took us a while to like transition from that to where we are now. Like, it's been 5 years. Yeah, do you know what I mean? But we kind of, we knocked out that, all that tube stuff, and we were like, yeah, this is sick. Like, everyone is fucking loving it. Yeah. But then, we got the wind knocked out of ourselves a little bit while getting some legal shit from TFL. And it was like, I was quite naive, I think, at that point. I was like, yeah, this is just what I want to do. I want to do everything based on this. Yeah. And then it was like, that's our stuff. You can't do that. And it made me think, fuck, I need to start thinking about other
shit. So you, the southbound, westbound, blah, 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 they all start kicking off at Crabbe and Black. And
it's probably about...
You set up an Instagram?
I think I did.
It hurt you bad, dropper?
Yeah, I definitely...
The name appears, and then you start pulling out, because those following pieces, that the tube seat patterns, what was it, Pimlico platform?
No, it was Brixton platform.
Brixton platform print was fucking gorgeous.
Yeah, like, but again, that idea, to print that shirt was given to me by my mate who gave me who told me to call it done in the first place. Because he was like, I fucking want to see that on a fucking t-shirt. And I was just like, yeah. And then it was like,
money,
but then I remember thinking, right, I want to do some other stuff, yeah. And I remember just going out on the tube and taking photos and then just tracing the seat covers.
How are you pushing these out? Because
I had a big cartel. And then obviously I was on Facebook at that time.
How it got quite a lot of reach was, we dropped it in about May to a friend of mine who I got to know this guy called Rob Brooksy, who's an Adidas training collector and a designer, a graphic designer. And I met him through the Hackney Wick space. So I long story short, I helped him get something out of the building that was stuck in there from an old landlord that got some shit happened. So we stayed in touch, and then he kind of kept following what me and Will were doing throughout the passing months. Yeah. And he had a mate that ran
a blog called Animal New York.
Animal was sick. I loved that.
Rob
knew the guy who ran or started Animal or something to do with Animal, and then there was two American guys, like a video guy, camera guy, and then just some ballsy American dude who was just interviewing us. And like, they were over in London at the time, basically doing loads of little edits about all the sort of like
what's going on.
Yeah, and like Rob was the guide. Like Rob was, because Rob just knows so many people.
That, man.
Yeah, it might be somewhere.
He's still on YouTube,
isn't
it?
And then because Rob knew what we were doing, he was just like, guys, I got these guys over. Can we come to your new studio? And this is when we just moved into, and I just got it.
I remember they came in when I was printing stickers. On the day, because I used to, because of my old job, I used to make vinyl lettering at work, so I used to have shitloads of offcuts, so I used to just collect them all, cut them down, print stickers, and then you said, we need to do this thing on the Saturday, so I was like, alright, come in, pretty hungover, definitely a bit stoned, innit? We'd had no experience of this kind of thing happening.
You've got people coming to
so these guys were chatting to us, and we chatted super openly to them, And then they put an edit out, And I remember, like, I was at work, and the guy's trying to email me, like, what's your name? Like, I need to put it in the thing, and and basically
didn't
wait for us, to give them the okay. Then they put it out there, and we were like, bruv, our names are all over this. It's like, we've just chatted openly about where the designs have come, and then bang, like a week later, we get the fucking TFL cease and desist.
Because it kind of went a bit viral. Because I think Hypebeast posted it, and then or linked it or something, and then it just got so much traffic attention.
And it was definitely a thing, though. I remember thinking, like, I would have said to them, like,
don't put our names or faces in it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But again, it was just, you know, it's just a learning curve, isn't it? It's
wowza.
Like,
we didn't know what we were doing.
So what did you get from CFL then?
Well, we just got, I basically got a fucking email from their legal representatives basically telling me to just stop selling the shirts, innit, and telling them what, you know, how much money I'd made and all of that. And
they asked you how much money.
Yeah, they have how I'd sold, how much stock, where I'd sold them to.
On the Monday at a festival, so we're both like hanging out of our asses.
I finally turned my phone off after 3 days, and I'm like, "Fucking hell, mate, this is not looking too good, is it?" But basically, what I kind of like, I wrote a response, and I sought quite a lot of help from people, like where I could, to get this response written right. Like people I knew who were professional, I was like, "Look, does this sound legit to you?" And I basically just wrote back and was like, it's a fucking art project and there's no money involved and everything's done for free. And I did remove them from sale. Yeah. And at that point, we'd sold like more than half of the shit. And I basically remember I had like, a fucking night, about 20 of the shirts left. And I went to Lambeth Country Show that weekend and gave most of them away and sold them for like fives or tens. And that's really what kicked our brand off amongst my mates, like my widest mates in South, because they were like, yeah, that guy's safe. Like, he just gave me the tea, innit?
He just
like,
went through it.
He just gave me them for a fiver, and it's like, and then it's like, so suddenly all of my mates were wearing them because they got them off me for a deal.
And so you were like, okay, so now you're in South.
Mm.
These teas have come out.
Yeah, this is like 2013,
You're printing for other people. You're kind pushing your own brand.
A bit. We were both still working.
You're still working a
job.
How important that part of this all is, actually, is the fact that
it funded everything, man.
One, it funds you, it funds everything, and two, it teaches us a fucking awful lot for free. We actually get paid to do it.
Yeah.
Like, I worked from the ages of 14, 15 through to I was started the business at 21, and all shit jobs. Postman, IKEA, weird fucking.
Yeah, it's all transferable.
The amount of skills and working, brilliant.
I think I was lucky because for me it was like I was working part time, so I had like 3 days a week work that was paid all right enough for me to be able to live. Like, not, I was living rent free at home with my mum and dad, and I had enough money to kind of keep the studio going.
Yeah,
but like you said as well, the stuff that, like, yeah, fundamentally I did, like, you know, kind of like practical work, like sticking vinyl lettering to walls, but then also, you know, all the ordering, all that. I learned all of that.
Yeah.
All the spreadsheets that we used at work, I saved onto a fucking USB stick, deleted all the information out of them, and then just used them for our own company. And it's like those kind of things you don't, you do, doing a bit of work like that, it does help you.
Being monotonous in anything, we have to be printers. Fuck's sake, how monotonous is that? And so if you're standing there and you've got fucking 30 signs to make for someone else who's getting the big money and you're getting the minimum wage and you're doing this, but you know you did it.
Yeah.
Fuck it, I'm going to stand here and print 100 T's. I'm just going to stand here and be that machine. But that's what printing does. But by working, going and get that work and understanding, I can earn that much money or I can do it all for myself. I'm going to put the same energy in, if not more.
Yeah.
So having jobs is wicked.
No, I mean...
So you're both running these jobs. You're both working hard.
Part-time,
Part-time. You're doing part-time as well.
I did different things, but essentially part-time.
You were just getting cash, getting that money.
Yeah, and I think, and then it was like, what,
so
I think...
mid 2013,
And the struggle for me, I think, between... it was 2015,
that's when we quit our
jobs. 2013, 2014, it was like, it was that struggle of, you're not quite doing enough to not work, but then work's getting in the way, because I'm constantly getting told off at work for trying to check my emails, for trying to like speak to people on the phone, because, like, you know, you're constantly trying to arrange things, and then someone be like, oh, I could do that photo shoot for you, but you have to be tomorrow, and you're like, yeah, but I'm got fucking work. And it's like, slowly but surely, it was like, I think there's like something was building up inside of us where we were just like, look, let's just fucking go for it, innit, and just fuck off the work and just make it like our number one priority.
2015,
I think that's when, as well, it's like we fully were like, because we did a lot of printing for other people, but I think our initial goals was to not do that.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
No,
it was to live your own dream and just make your own shit. But then I think it realised that actually there's a way of making money from that, and I much prefer making money from that than I do working for someone else.
I work for brands constantly, or for everyone else constantly, and I thank whoever, because I've got mates even in this industrial estate here all working for other people, and it's like, at third party shit. I've got to work for these brands so I can get to sit in a studio and record podcasts, or so I can print whenever I want, or when so I can do whatever I want. You've got to work for other people, and the way you seem to have laid it out is working perfectly fine, because who you're printing for as well, the majority of it looks like it's quite cool, quite fun, people from the culture. Like, it's not fucking... inevitably, I presume you've done corporate jobs as well, because it pays...
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff that goes on behind the scenes that's not put out there, but then... Also, it's like, we do a lot of jobs, that it's like, initially, we might just be like, we did that little thing somewhere, but then, you know, in the background, we're hitting, like, 100 T-shirts a month for this person or whatever. Yeah. So, I think it's lucky that we've got a good network... somehow, I don't know, like we were saying, through all the cultures that we were involved in when we were teenagers, it all does come back to the fact that we're still friends with a lot of those people, and they've kicked on and done well in their own right, so therefore we're getting work from them.
You've been the guys to go to get that product made, because it's a known thing in the culture. You're like, don't have to know you. The person lives in the other side of the city from you, has never met you at all, but just knows, I'm in the graffiti culture, and I want to get a T-shirt printed. Who do I go to? Who do I check first anyway? And they're going to go straight to you lot.
I hope people think that.
It's how it goes. It's how the 16-year-old thinks. He doesn't know anyone. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so 2015 hits. You've quit work. You run straight. Fuck it, we're going at this full time. And then you... obviously, that time you get to put into the business pays off, because the people you are working for, you print for the Lurkers. You print for, name a couple of other people you print for.
We've done jobs for, we've done quite a lot of jobs for Knees in the past. A big client of ours at the moment, a girl called Hannah that runs a place called Palm Vaults up in Mare Street in Hackney. Again, all friends of friends. I mean, God, there's just thousands, man. Hard. It's like...
you're supporting a culture, man.
Yeah,
you're
I think there was definitely something for me, where... when we first started doing it, where I got a lot of mates that don't have loads of money but are trying to kick their own brand off in some sort of way. Not be it a clothing brand, it might be a music night, it might be they're a DJ, they want something, or they're a skater. And it's like, I think we facilitated a lot for people where it's like, oh, you want to pay in cash? Cool, no problem, innit? You want to only get 10 of those? No problem. Whereas other people just wouldn't speak to these people. Who weren't on email, who didn't do that sort of who kind of, we helped, we kind of wanted to help those, because I think that's what made what we were doing interesting, because we're bringing interesting work to people's attention, which wouldn't have necessarily got produced if we weren't there, because those people wouldn't have been able to afford to do it somewhere else.
You've got to let people know that they can become part of something, or like you can enable them. You've got the goods, and don't fucking bankrupt yourself by it.
That's how, definitely how we began, but like things have taken and they just get more professional as the years go by, because we know. You know, it's like we're both pretty much self-taught screen printers, So, not going to lie that some of the jobs that we've done over the years would just be a first-time learning curve for us. Do you know what I mean? So you'd say to someone, you don't want to be like, oh, you've got to pay this, because you're like, I don't even know if I can do that.
It came off absolutely amazing, but that Lurker's Bertie...
That was a good one.
You could not have printed anything like that before.
No.
That was brand new.
That was the first job that we did when we went full time. That was just after I quit my job. And I came here to show you, because I remember thinking, because I was like, look, I've quit my job.
You just done it. And you had the CMYK marks at the crop marks on the print.
I came up here because I... again, like, you know, going back to what Tom was saying, like, we were quite inspired by what you were doing here. So I was like, I'll come and check you and be like, look, this is what we're up to, innit? I don't know where it's going to cross over between us, but I just kind of knew I needed to show people, innit? Definitely. I think at that point it was like, I wasn't sure how things were going to go. So I was kind of trying to seek out little bits of work elsewhere. So I was like, you know, maybe you need something. But then actually... we kind of got enough work to sort of
just keep
it. We were busy all the time. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
Like, we all moved home by this point when we both quit. We all moved home, and then I actually signed on to the Dole and was, you know, I don't know if I should say this, yeah, did did a bit of fraud.
Yeah, it's happen, man.
Yeah, and like that's...
especially if it's gonna fucking make you better yourself.
Yeah,
to
yeah,
not
of course,
be...
man. It allowed me to take myself away from the stress of the other job, because the other job I was doing, because I'd been there like 6 years by this point, they were putting a lot of responsibility on me. Like, yeah. I was running installations, like being site manager for like big installs, and it was. It's a full-time occupation for about... Yeah.
It's a lifestyle. It will take over your life.
Yeah, like, man. Fully. Yeah. It was stressing me trying to do that as well as the other thing. So, like, yeah, I just had to do that. And
it's a natural way, like, you know, you've got to do the work. You've got to work and you've got to do your own thing at the beginning, yeah? Because how are you going to survive?
Yeah.
Yeah. But then it gets to a point where one thing starts being detrimental to the other.
Yeah.
And I think we realised that, you know, after being... 2 years into it working part-time, and we're just like, look, let's just take the plunge. And it was like, yeah, you know, took a massive pay cut, right, but it was worth it.
I've had dark times over the years, and especially since I set up the agency, it's been so hard because there's no daily money anymore. The shop was always daily money, and there's been times where the discussions happen between me and my girlfriend is like, maybe I've got to get a job, and then I literally think about it and I'm like, I'm willing to do it if shit hits the fucking fan. But I know in those months where that shit was going on, if I went and spent that time at a job, I'm not hunting for work, which means I'm not earning the money I should be earning. And like, it does, it gets to that point and you're like, no, hang on.
Yeah, and I think it's like, we've just over time, you just, you know, you rework how you like price and stuff, how who you're working for, the jobs that you do take on, the jobs that you don't, and we're kind of like, it's always just learning. It's just fine tuning, always.
And so I mean, that's wicked, man. I love it when someone says, right, I'm quitting, I'm doing this full time. That's the fucking best fucking thing, man. That's, it's super inspiring.
Such a good and feeling,
man, it's the best feeling.
But also, but you get that pat on the back from some people, but you get that, what the fuck are you doing, from other people.
They're the best ones. They're the best ones, because those people end up going to bed at night, putting their head on the pillow and thinking, shit's possible. I'm going to wake up tomorrow, I'm going to fucking still not acknowledge that fact. And then they go back to bed again that night again, and they go, shit is possible because of what you've done. They may not agree with you, but believe me, everyone understands, man. This is the best fucking route. Everyone wants it. Everyone wants to have the balls to take the risk, and that's the point about being inspiring. And
I mean, we're definitely like, you know, I think we're under no illusion that like there's still a lot of work to be put in. And
easy.
I think that's it.
It's
some people can kind of like, you can brush it aside, you know, you just fucking go to your studio and have a bit of fun, and what's that? But it's like, yeah, but you don't realise the fucking the struggle that goes.
It's like, money's a big one. Like you sacrifice all of the luxuries that people earn
security.
30, 40 grand a year.
Well, but you know, when your mate's like, oh, do you want to just fucking quickly come over on holiday to here or there? And you're like, well, do you know what? At the moment, mate, I can't think about that because I've got jobs on and, like, you know what I mean? I can barely pay my rent.
Exactly. Listen, being self-employed, there's nothing easy about it. And obviously some people, artists in particular, have gone off and made fucking hundreds of thousands of pounds and done amazing. And some printers have done the same, and agents have done the same. There are routes for us to go through and make that successful life, but this initial stage is fucking hard.
But
it doesn't stop being hard.
But like, then also, there is that feeling of like, when you're doing it for yourself, you might not be making loads now, but it's potentially infinite in that way.
Man,
you know what I mean?
It becomes a point where it's just like, I'm 37, man, I don't really care. I'm like, I'm not looking to become a millionaire. I've got no fucking fiending for a house. I live on a boat, for God's sake. Like, I'm going to go and live in India when I'm 55. That's the only place I'm buying a house. And I do not want to be rich. I want to pay the fucking bills. I want to bring my son up. I want to make sure my girl's all right while she's studying, and make sure my dog's
It's such a nice way to be the master of your world.
Well, yeah, I mean, it goes back to what we kind of chatted about before we were actually in the booth.
Yeah.
Which, like, it's just a lifestyle choice in that sense. It's like, I want to wake up and go to my studio.
Yeah.
Whether or not that's like, okay, Monday I've got to graft and print 100 t-shirts for someone.
Yeah.
But then on Tuesday, it's like, I get to sit and design my own tees.
Yeah.
And then on Wednesday,
I've got to find new work because I've done that job and I've got to find the next job.
But then also as well, like, maybe when you go into the studio one day and someone's like, fuck it, should we just go out and paint the wall today?
Yeah.
Why not, innit? Come back into the studio later. And I take that over earning what I was earning before every day of the week.
And
you know,
listen,
what I mean?
Congrats to anyone who's holding down a fucking job and getting the bills paid and security's good and your wife's happy and your kids are fed and, you know what I mean, living that real everyday life.
It's hard graft.
There's a bit of a cheat sheet somewhere, and if you find it, and I think you find it through culture, and you hold on to it, you get to live quite a mad fucking interesting life.
Yeah, yeah. Your experience just it changes. Grows.
Yeah, it's a completely different.
Yeah, I guess I think to like what could be that way to say it is like what we do. It might seem like right, we print tees, that's what we do on a daily basis, but I have a far more varied existence now than I did when I used to work in the job that because it's like, yeah, fundamentally that's what we do, but there's plenty of other bits and bobs that get brought into it here and there.
What, so 2016, what was that like then? Because so you're really deep into it now and you're like,
yeah, it's a sort of second year doing it full time.
I think
there was definitely a point definitely a point where it's like initially, like early when we were first in the studio, like, you know, the t-shirts that we were making got a real big wave of popularity, and that obviously dips because, you know, those things don't count. And then it's like, so there's a little bit of like, shit, now we got to really work for this. If we want people to keep people interested, we got to really work for it. We got to actually really put the time in. It's not just selling itself. And I think that's when like we started letting the printing business grow as well, because in our mind it was like, if we've got a solid print business, then we can make whatever the fuck tees we want, and it doesn't matter if they sell, because we're not relying on that for our money. It's like, I think that's the way it is now. Like, we're under no illusion that like our clothing brands are going to become some global phenomenon overnight. It's like, really, we see it as like our studio is sustainable
essentially to what we do. Like, we just about break even, probably a little bit more in everything we do with done, but the creative energy we get to accumulate and direct doing that, it's like, so it doesn't matter about the cost and what you make from it. It's like, it's so much fun just like scheming and planning ideas, working on photo shoots, and you know, just creating essentially.
So when you've got you've got done running, and you a designer as well, Tom?
Yeah.
So you both design the tees, and then you work with all types of artists as well.
Yeah. Well, to be fair, like, I don't know, like, probably about like 5 or 6 over the years. There's more there's stuff to come, but again, like those, I think like.
Oh, what, the collaboration?
Because I think, okay, yeah, so maybe that was something that after the initial kind of hype we managed to generate, that obviously trailed off a little bit. And I think trying to kind of keep things interesting again, where it wasn't just like, oh, yeah, this is our logo on a tee or whatever. It's like, that's when we started really thinking about collaborations and being like, we want to, like... First with Type, but also with like Tizer. He's someone that Tom was living with him at the time, so it was like the opportunity was there, and it was like, you know, he was down for it, and it's like, again, it was like, kind of, we facilitate it, we offer people like, look, we'll get all this shit made, isn't it? Like, and it's the kind of thing that a lot of these people have always want to do, but it's hard to achieve it, you know.
It's just a bit
there's points where you're
the OG.
Your own designs, you know, you get that creative like rut occasionally, and it's like, it's good for, I think what's good for us is to bring other people into work with, because it reignites your own interest in it.
You've done tees with Tizer,
Discreet we did last summer as well.
Really nice. All Type, No Face.
We've printed for him.
That's what I mean.
There's a bit of a grey area where it's like, we print for people.
Sometimes
people might be like, oh, that's a collaboration. It's like, you know, well, actually, we did print it for them. Because they're friends of ours or associates, it's like, we're going to share that.
There's also a process you're going to talk about, because someone comes with an idea, even if they want it for themselves. I could come to you with an idea. I want printed for Rare Kind, I want it for the business, but you could tell me, right, but you could do it like this. So that's where the collaboration may happen, but it's not under your brand.
Yeah, and there was a lot of stuff where, like...
Neves painted a wall for us. We did, like, a hoarding or something, and that was just, you know...
Just for fun, really.
Yeah,
but
he just did the outline.
But also, there was my pal, good pal of mine, Eddie, who's a DJ, who is, like, got a disco, house, funk and boogie night called Boogie Nights in South. And I started printing tees for him. Perfect example, where it's like, he didn't have the money to do it, but I was like, fuck it, innit? You're my mate, innit? I designed the logo, let's do it. And he's obviously friends with quite a lot of other people. So he got Knees to do a t-shirt design for him, and he got Vibes to do a t-shirt design for him, and he got Gox to do a t-shirt design for him over the years. So it's like, we printed all of them. And obviously,
they all got promoted under us as well. So, you know, there was a lot of people like bringing in, and jobs like that with them lot, it's like, I think when we did the Gox ones for him, it was like, we were just throwing colours all over the screens, you know what I mean? It's like, it was not a job that could ever have gone out commercially, because every single shirt looked a bit weird and different, but it's like, it made it...
We also did like a British Rail logo printed shirt with like a...
Oh yeah, because that
funny colours, and that was basically a stencil that
from years before.
And we made the separation by using a stencil and dusting paint. He dusted paint on like bits of acetate, and then made up the three separations that way. So it was all done by hand with the stencil, and then it's just like a big BR logo.
I remember that too.
And so it was just like little things like that when you just have people passing through and you have an idea and then it gets created. And
there's the crossover there. That's the club, but it's not always under the Dunn brand.
And I think like that's something hopefully that people have like, you know, benefited from like working for us, is that we just had the space and it was like, come and just chat to us and we will get stuff, you know, we will make something together if you know, if it seems like a good thing to do at the time.
Can you tell us of anything that's going to be dropping this year?
We've got a big we're organising a big like pop-up shop in Peckham on the 3rd of June, but we got a massive space, so we've actually invited about 5 or 6 other independent brands.
Wicked.
Some of them print their own stuff, not all of them, but essentially independent, like, you know, London. One from Bristol.
Okay, wicked.
Like, but basically all people that are kind of part of a, I don't know, it's not really the graph sort of scene thing. It's that kind of
the
T-shirt like kind of garms culture kind of thing.
The ideas of screen printing is a culture. Like, I was at Print Club for 4 years is where I learned to print, and being there I just found, I'm like, what the fuck is this place, man? It's a completely different world, like, and it's a culture, and so there's brands that come off the back brands that come off the back of these spots.
But we definitely, as like as a clothing brand as such, like, we, you know, we plan ahead to an extent, but this is kind of the joy of it, is that you might turn around to me next week and be like, I've got a great idea for a shirt, and then there you go, that's the next release we're doing. It's like, we don't necessarily, you know, we don't limit ourselves to, we've got to do a spring, summer, fucking 17, like, fuck that.
Do you think you ever will?
Nah. No, it's not us, man. It's not us.
We tried to organise ourselves in that way,
works.
But
it's not us, man. It's like,
the way society moves now, the way everything is now, this minute, who can be fucked to wait till spring? Just drop the fucking
But
teeth.
Also, as well, we're not kind of professional enough yet to, like, be, like, going to like fucking trade shows and getting orders from shops and stuff. It's like, again, it goes back to kind of, I think for us it's like the Dunn brand, we just want to let it keep growing organically as it is. It would take a massive influx of probably cash and marketing to get it massive, so for us it's like, keep developing the studio as like a real solid entity and just let our t-shirts flow as and when we want them to. Not being like, oh yeah, like this winter we need to do 12 shirts, otherwise how are we going to pay the bills? It's like, no, we'll do the shirts as the good designs come. I mean, it's not like putting stuff out just for the sake of
it. So is there any good crossovers this year, or you just at the minute you're currently
at the moment we're currently
a lot of our own stuff,
so you're both designing again.
I mean, we've got a few potential things lined up, but again it's like with collaborations, it's like the people we're working with are quite hard to like nail down.
Like the Tizer one took like 3 or 4 months to actually from first saying, shall we do this, to
but also
releasing.
We don't want to be pushy, innit?
We've got a fucking summer drop.
It's about the artist. Good work comes from a happy artist, you know what I mean?
Keep that epic, man.
I just know from our side, because people, we get offered to do collaborations from stuff all the time. You know, people are like, oh, you know, could you sponsor this, sponsor that, and it's like, you know, from the initial email whether or not you're going to fucking do it, or the initial conversation. It's like the way that you're viewed or treated as an artist. So we definitely, this is an artist run brand for artists, for designers, for, you know, we're not here to be like, do this for us, do it by this deadline, otherwise we're not interested.
No, because you're pushing another business as well, which is managing, by taking the slack, by working for brands and doing whatever you need to do and making sure you pay the bills, you're then
take all that slack there, and I'll take all that slack, and we'll bring you in this side. And so you're, mm-hmm. it's good that you're finishing.
But also, you know, when we do stuff for other people, there's so much shit we learn from that, which we bring into our own. It's
part of the best shit, man.
Yeah.
You get clients asking you to do jobs which you never thought.
Yeah.
All.
Well, if an artist comes to me and says, "I want to print something," I'm going to tell them to print something I know. I've had clients come to me and say, "I need this printed," and you're like, "That is possible. I just need to figure out how to fucking do it."
Well, that's kind of like what I was saying to you about how in the first days about how we used to approach charging things, because I'd be like, "Well, I don't quite know what I'm doing, so I'm not going to charge loads." But then you learn then. Like, you're like, "Rah, now I know how to do CMYK printing. Safe." Exactly. Do you know what I mean? It's like, it is good that people push you, innit, to do that sort of stuff.
So well, look, it's cities have been a big part of it, obviously, and as a big inspiration. And then the different cultures, even though you're both from different places, you ran through the same type of cultures and met up through them, and you then, you know, hustle hard and keep working like fucking good fucking guys, just like, fuck it, we're going to keep jobs and we're going to follow a culture. And you end up taking those risks and everything's flying through, and it's 2017 and you're 5 years in with a brand or working in this sense, and sounds like it's all going fucking good.
Yeah, well, what I was what I just was saying to Tom just while you popped is just, it's funny how it's gone full circle, where he was saying, yeah, when I was 13 and I went into Rarekind in Brighton, and here we are in your booth talking to you. So do you know what I mean? Like you said, the culture, the culture is important, because it fucking, you know, it keeps you where you are. And it's like, you're speaking to us now because of that culture that we were influenced by.
But what's
at a later, you know what I mean?
What's quite nuts is that, you know, I met you, I've obviously met you before, Tom, but I met Will in the culture in the last couple of years, and I've loved what you've done. And so I was just like, I'm starting this podcast, who do I want to get? Like, wicked, you were on my list. And that's quite nuts that we could be.
No,
I met you like 15 years ago.
And that's like that. But that kind of explains what you're trying to, what explains the point you're making, isn't it? That the culture really is important.
Well,
because it come back to the fact that.
You know what it is,
that
to be
people,
honest, right? It was that I had to do something with my life, because I wasn't doing anything. I was just a normal kid with no GCSEs, and I was becoming a dad very young, and I had to do something with my life, and culture was the only thing I had. And then I've now got, my son is 17 this year, and and I'm watching him and I'm like, fuck. And I'm like, anytime, yes, school is important, and so I'm hoping, you know, I'm helping him get through that and this and that, but I really wanted him to take hold of a culture. And I've been, as a dad, I've been stressing, like, I'm really pushy, I've been a bit too much of a pushy parent with him about it, because I know how important it is. And what's helped me actually with these conversations is hearing people state a story that doesn't say that they were 15 when they picked the culture that they ended up being part of. And so it's nuts, it's like therapy basically for me being a dad.
It goes through stages,
man,
isn't it?
It's nuts, because I then have to remember, but the thing is, I was such a fucking geek of a graffiti kid, like when I got into it, that's all I did. I did that and crime, and that was it. And it was all I had at the end when Josh was about to be born, was I'd stop the crime, I just had graffiti. And I'm like,
got a legitimate.
But that was all I had. So when I'm watching him and I'm like, what do you mean you want to do this and you're not doing it anymore? What do you mean you want to do this and you're not doing it anymore? What do you mean you were doing this and you're not doing it anymore? And I've been oh my God, I wish he'd pick something.
Yeah, I think that's just like an age. Because I remember being similar.
Yeah, well, that's
like,
all
when
I'm
I was
hearing.
Younger, like doing shit like karate and like just dropping out of it because I got kicked in the face. I'm like, no, I don't want to do that anymore. And then like those other things. And I could see my mum just getting pissed off with me, just like, what do you want to do? Like, figure it out. Like, whatever you want to do, I'll support it. And like, to be fair to my mum and dad, they were really good, you know. Yeah. Whatever, I eventually convinced her to buy me that fucking BMX.
Exactly,
and
here
I am, like, you know,
because of that,
14 years later, and I'm still.
It's because
more.
Of that, though. It's because you took part in the culture, and I think that I've been that fucking dad. I think then, you know, not remembering my youth, no matter how in touch I am with it, and how much of a young dad I am. The fact is, I forgot, and these conversations have really helped me.
Yeah,
and you know, so yeah, part of it is a bit selfish for me, but I'm sure it's inspiring for other people as well. Because I'm just like, sick. These stories are fucking amazing.
Well, it's been it's just enjoyable. It's just enjoyable for us to even just fucking to kind of like go through it chronologically in a way. It's like it makes
it's brought back loads of memories, man. Like going to parties, like riding.
Probably bang out a few nice t-shirt designs to go off the back of this.
Some shit wrong with it, man. I literally feel it's that important. Do you know what I mean? It's that important, and I want people to know, whether they already know or need to know, just know how important it is.
Yeah, no, definitely.
So listen, that was wicked, guys, man. Thank you very much for coming.
Yeah, all good. Thanks very much for having us, mate.
Done London, they learnt from the culture, and they put together a dope brand that will see them right for the future ahead. I love their passion for what they do, and they're always out there striving to print better and be better. They've done some real cool things since this recording. They mentioned the pop-up they organised in Peckham. Well, alongside some other new brands, in August late last year, they opened up a full-time store in the Holdren's Arcade, where Wavy Garms and V-Block are. And Dunn's latest move? They've gone and got a larger shop within that location, and from the 1st of March, they've been hustling from there. Go find them on Instagram, remember, at dunlondon, or their website, dunlondon.co.uk. I hope you enjoyed that one. There's another one dropping next Friday. Love your city and love your culture.
Love your culture.